南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。
Okay, hello everyone. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. It's wonderful to have you here. Computers notwithstanding. Anyway, we're going to get in deep into the Nirvana Sutra today. And I'm going to put up that form, that picture I created in PowerPoint. It's something I left off of it too, which we'll talk about today. It's not missing anything so much as I want to make sure to align the terms we run into, the language we run into all the time as we study, to relate them together where they belong so we can understand better as we study. And I'll just go ahead and say it. We hear all the time, and it's in our silent meditations in Gongyo, this idea of time without beginning, or beginningless time, and I have in this picture I made this concept of space-time, which might be better stated as time-space, because whether it's because it's a flip or different or not what we hear all the time, we really identify that space is a result of time. They kind of result in each other. They're two sides of the same coin. And therein lies samsara. So, we're going to read a portion of the Nirvana, the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, where this whole construct that I've put together really gets elucidated and nailed down, albeit in other words. Okay. Computers. It's like they're living beings. All right. So this part is early. This would be, if you're reading a translation that's in three volumes, this would be in the first, I'm quite sure, it's chapter 10, on the four truths. And you're saying, what? On the four truths? Are we back there again? This is the last words of Shakyamuni. And as I've been saying all along, and I didn't get something to drink. Okay, so as I was saying, before I was rudely interrupted... The four truths. Well, yeah, I have been saying this for, you've heard me say this many times in many videos. As we study outside of the Lotus Sutra, you will find that Shakyamuni repeated himself ad nauseum. Albeit, learning what sounds like the same thing, as we grow in our capacity as humans to understand, we find, sometimes to our surprise, quite often to our surprise, that what we thought we knew, we now re-know in a different way, at a deeper level, to the point where we may transform entirely what we thought we knew, with the same teaching, albeit from a much more enlightened state, a much more capacity-driven understanding of the meaning of words, right? So, this is very interesting because People often translate the first noble truth as simply life is suffering. And still, on his deathbed, he has, I think this is Kashyapa he's talking to, this question from a basis of misunderstanding that the nobility of suffering is not a thing. It's a noble truth, not because life is suffering and their suffering is noble. Do you see how messed up that is? But still, among his students, a misconception. It's like humans love suffering. I don't know what that is. But Shakyamuni's darn sure going to tear it apart before he's extinct, right? So here we go. The Buddha also said to Kashyapa, "Noble son!" Exclamation point. It is not appropriate to term suffering as the noble truth of suffering. Why is that? If one were to term suffering the noble truth of suffering, then cattle, sheep, donkeys, horses, and the denizens of hell would also have the noble truth of suffering. It's not that they don't suffer. It's that it's not a noble truth. It's a noble truth because it's a statement of fact, because of samsara, because of the nature of our human minds, are not understanding the whole truth, the truth of quiescent energy, that everything is made of the same thing. You see, in the early teachings, he was teaching people, as I was stating yesterday, in the Anapasati, the Anapanasati Sutta, quotes are given of early teachings about the meditations on freeing ourselves from the notion of self. And what ends up happening in the early teachings is that the students take for granted that all the Buddha work is about human beings. And that if we can finally accomplish distinguishing our, quote, self from everything else, we're liberated. But the really critical point that's missed in that is that it's not about simply separating the perception of self from everything else, because that too is identification. The point is to separate the perception of self from all phenomena, that the same processes that produce a human being, a rock, a blade of grass, a planet, a universe, a galaxy, name it. If it's an it, it's the same process. It's just that humans also, additionally, in the process, create consciousnesses that we then have the ability to perceive the process, but instead we identify with it and we make the whole mistake all over again and see ourselves as unique amongst everything else. That's how you end up thinking that suffering is a noble thing. You might as well be a Christian. You know? So this is what Shakyamuni is going to dive into here. Whoever thinks that the extremely profound domain, sphere, realm, visaya of the Tathagata, pick a word, the reality of Buddhahood, Buddha, Tathagata, not Shakyamuni, Buddhahood, the eternal, untransforming Dharmakaya body of truth is a body nourished by food, such a person does not know the virtues and power which the Tathagata possesses. What do you think he's talking about there? The eternal, the untransforming, no process going on. That's quiescent energy. That's energy at rest. Energy not forming. And therefore, with no form resulting from forming. You don't feed the Buddha mind. It doesn't requisite feeding. Not knowing that is suffering. This, i.e., such ignorance of the true nature of the Buddha, is suffering. Why so? Due to ignorance. Because you haven't experienced it yet. If you did, you would understand that all phenomena from the get-go, before the Big Bang, is the same exact process as the one you wake up to every morning. Everything. Not understanding that you are no different, no special amalgam, just part of the same exact process of this entire samsaric mind space, this time space, space-time, whatever you want to call it, is a manufactured, constructed thing. If you don't get the entirety of that, then you're suffering. You're suffering, why? Because you are experiencing, manifesting emotions, feelings from attachments to this process rather than observing it. Because you don't understand. You're choosing to be in the rapids instead of observing the rapids. It's not an annihilation other than in thought, in perception, in mind. A person views Dharma as non-Dharma, a non-Dharma as Dharma. Know that this person will fall into the unfortunate realms and repeat birth, death as repeat birth and death, you know, point to point, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. That's time, space. Birth, death is space, time. That is suffering. Know that this person will fall into the fourth. This will increase the bonds of illusion and worry will grow. What do I always say? Stress and anxiety. That is what suffering, what not knowing the truth being the energy of formations versus quiescent energy. But within space-time, we can observe that truth. Or we can just dive into it and experience birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, suffering. If he comes to know that the Tathagata is eternal, one with whom there comes about no change, or if he hears the word eternal, he will obtain birth in the translation here, heaven, the Dharma realm, if you will, the Buddhahood. And on gaining emancipation, what's the emancipation from? Birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, right? Suffering. In other words, he's emancipated from not knowing the truth. He will actually see that the Tathagata is eternal and unchanging. What is the only thing that Shakyamuni ever said is unchanging? Because everything, as you know, from a study of impermanence, right? Emptiness, all of those different terms and their dissection. It's about everything being in a constant state of change. Why? Because formations are constantly occurring to reinstantiate the formed, the produced, which are not actually produced. The idea that a thing is produced is something mental that we buy into. But if you understand that that product is just a momentary flash of a process that we, with our samsaric minds, choose to make a thing out of, a permanent, a holding on to, a possessing. I say this over and over again. Then we are choosing to be in the rapids. Rapids that don't exist in and of themselves. Same teaching over and over and over. When this is well seen, understood, he will say, I heard about this in the past. Now that I'm emancipated, I know this. As I was ignorant regarding the ultimate, I have been repeating birth and death to no end. Today, I am enlightened as regards true knowledge. End quote. If knowledge reaches this stage, this is truly practicing suffering, because your practice is within the realms, the rapids, when your head is bouncing off the rocks and the water is tossing you about and you're trying to get upright so you can breathe, you're practicing suffering. But knowing that there is something other than that, that is the ultimate truth, is that you can get out, stand stably on the shore, and look upon suffering. There is much to profit from. One may well practice this, but if one does not know things to be thus, no profit will result. In other words, you can intellectualize this all day long, but you're still in the rapids, bouncing off the rocks. Until you really gaze upon the nature of the rapids, so that you yourself, quote unquote, experience removal from the process, objectivity of the process, then you will know what's actually happening and experience the truth of what is happening. That's your Tathagata, your Buddha mind. Even while you're standing soaked and wet and bruised on the side of the rapids, you're no longer in them. That knowledge, that experience is your big aha, Buddhahood moment. This is what is called knowing suffering. This is the noble truth of suffering. You can only know the noble truth about suffering by emancipating yourself from it. You can't know it, and you can't understand suffering to be a noble truth by being in it. That does not qualify you as somebody who understands suffering, or that it's noble, because there's nothing noble about it. It's ignorance. Follow? If one does not practice thus, this is suffering, and not the noble truth of suffering. Ta-da, bingo. We say truth of the cause of suffering. A person does not truly know the wonderful Dharma and receives what is impure. This is the case of menials. Non-Dharma is called wonderful Dharma. A person annuls what is right and won't allow it to live. On account of this, that person does not know dharmata, the essence of reality. Not knowing this, he repeats birth and death and suffers greatly. He does not get born in the Buddha realm and gain right emancipation. If a person has deep wisdom and does not transgress against wonderful dharma, he will in consequence be born in the Dharma realm and attain right emancipation. If a person does not know where suffering arises and says that there cannot be any wonderful Dharma or what is eternal and that all turns to nothingness, that person in consequence will repeat transmigration for innumerable kalpas to come, suffering all kinds of sorrow. stress and anxiety, right? If a person says the Dharma is eternal and that there is no change, this is knowing the cause, and this is the noble truth of the cause of suffering. If one does not so practice, this is the cause of suffering and not the noble truth of the cause. So we get into a tricky thing here. Is what does he mean by eternal? And this is probably not the word he used. Remember the words we use in Gongyo. Beginningless time. Time without beginning. That's the quiescent energy. Why? Because there's no time space. All of this samsaric activity is in a construction of time space. Because formations, energy becoming on instantiating mass, time space. From that moment on, karma takes over the process, because the process is energy plus work, creating, instantiating tendencies and conditions, not things. But apparent things, apparent to the samsaric mind. And that the truth of this whole process of life, death, life, death, life, death, is that the process exists for itself as a momentary perceptive knowing of the mind. To watch the activities of agitated energy. And that the truth is that there's no beginning and there's no end. There's just this process, and it occurs and it diminishes, and the whole thing happens in an instant. An instant. What is that? Whatever space-time component you want to give it. Because that's just a measure. We can get into that some more, but do you see how he's rehashing the Four Noble Truths here? We say the truth of the extinction of suffering. He's going over things from the perfection of wisdom and all the way back to the Four Noble Truths, or the first one, actually. If a person practices many things, teachings, and the way of nothingness, this is non-good. The way of nothingness. Who's he calling out there? The nihilists, the eternalists, the Chan, the Zen. They've just attached themselves to a different aspect of something that doesn't exist other than in the mind. Mind only, remember? Why so? Because this annuls all laws and breaks this true storehouse of the Tathagata. They basically are equating Buddhahood with the vacuum of space. Well, congratulations. You're experiencing the vacuum of space. Ta-da! You've just attached yourself to something else. Nothingness is a thing. It's so crazy. Any practice of this category is the practicing of nothingness. One who practices the extinction of suffering acts against what all Tirthikas do. One who practices the extinction of suffering acts against what all Tirthikas do. If the practice of nothingness is the truth of extinction, there are Tirthikas who also practice the teaching of nothingness. We must say that they too possess the truth of extinction. A person says there is the Tathagatagarbha, the Buddha womb, the pristine mind, under cover of illusion. One cannot see this. But if one does away with all illusions, one may indeed enter. It is thus. By the raising of such a mind, by cultivating such an attitude of mind, one gains freedom in all things. If a person practices the way of the hidden storehouse, selflessness, and emptiness, such a person repeats birth and death for innumerable ages to come and suffers from sorrow, stress, anxiety. A person who does not do such practices may certainly, even though he might have illusions, soon do away with it. Why so? Because he well knows the undisclosed, secret, hidden storehouse of the Tathagata. This is the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. If any person who practices extinction in such a way is my disciple. A person not practicing the way thus is one who practices emptiness. This is not the noble truth of extinction. So as I was saying earlier, he's showing the distinction between somebody who tries to annihilate their selfhood, which is a distinctly thingified nothing, in place of the absolute truth that all phenomena are this process. Perceiving that, one is liberated in mind and achieves the Buddha mind, the discovery of the energy component of all this process. That detaches you from the process. You can then witness, observe, without investing or identifying with. Does that make sense? We say noble truth of the way. This is none but the treasures of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and right emancipation. All people say, with an upside-down mind, there is no Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, or right emancipation. Birth and death are like phantoms. They hold such views. Well, birth and death aren't phantoms. Birth and death are real, momentary parts of the process as attached to a self. Watching it unattached to the idea self is to rediscover what it is to observe that process unattached, outside the rapids. As a result, they repeat birth and death through the three worlds of desire, form, and formlessness. Time, space. Look at the chart. Suffering there greatly for a long time to come. If a person awakens and comes to see that Tathagata is eternal, that no change comes to him, and that the same applies to Dharma, Sangha, and emancipation, by this one thought the person obtains unmolested, unrestricted freedom for innumerable ages to come, and he may enjoy it as he wills. Partake, bodhisattva practice, partake of this samsara, this time-space. Partake of it without being swallowed whole by it through attachments. Be unattached. Participate. Enjoy is the word he uses. Why? Because once in the past, due to the four inversions, I took non-dharma as dharma and was met by innumerable karmic consequences. When I had made away with such a view, I attained true awakening to Buddhahood. Now he's talking about Shakyamuni, the man. This is how I did it. This is the story of the lotus. This is the noble truth of the way. Any person who says that the three treasures are non-eternal and holds this view of life, then this is a false way of practicing and is not the noble truth of the way. If a person practices the way thus and has it, sees it, understands it as eternal, such a person is my disciple. This is an ongoing process. It never ends. He abides in the true view of life and practices the teachings of the Four Noble Truths. Bam. Bodhisattva Kashyapa said to the Buddha, O world-honored one, I now, for the first time, know and practice the great depths of the Four Noble Truths. That's chapter 10, the Four Noble Truths. One of the first, if not the first teaching, the Four Noble Truths. And here on his deathbed, comes right back to it, albeit with a depth of understanding that now assumes a base of knowledge. Right? He's talking to accomplished bodhisattvas, supposedly, here. Not to people aspiring to be liberated from stress, sorrow, pain, anxiety, right? Emancipation, for lack of a, it's a good word. It's what we associate with words that's problematic. So there's some more. Chapter 12 on the nature of the Tathagata. So we're going to talk more about Buddhahood in the next video. I think for this one, we've covered a good amount. I know this can all seem like word salad, and I apologize for that, but I'm trying to make this relevant to our modern minds. If you have an idea about this or something is confusing about this, call me out. Let me know what it is that I'm saying that's causing confusion, because that's the last thing I want to do. I want to clear this muck up, right? Because this practice shouldn't be hard. What should be hard is maintaining it, because we're in samsara. So once we get into the rhythm of making this Buddha mind more aware, longer awareness within our daily lives, the more we can course through this samsara and enjoy it for what it is, not admired in it. Yeah. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your practice. The more we study, I hope the more you see how amazing Namo Myoho Renge Kyo is, that we can do this with the mere invocation of this emancipation. The depth of what it means to have a mandala, understand Gohonzon, our own Buddha connection, Buddha mind, Buddha awareness, Buddha realm. Maybe that's a better word to use from now on, Buddha realm. Seems like a different place, though. It is this place. It's just perceived from an entirely different vantage point, right? Okay, take care of your health. Be kind. Like, subscribe, share. We need to grow this sangha. And I will see you in the next one. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Bye for now.